Good afternoon. I'm Linda Dow. Today, May 20th, is proclaimed World Bee Day by the United Nations to raise it awareness of the importance of these pollinators and the threats to their existence. On today's In Focus, we visit local beekeeper Johnny DeMattos to see what the buzz is all about. Welcome, Johnny.
Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. So, you know, my first thought, of course, is why on earth would someone want to be a beekeeper and chance getting stung?
Oh, that's a question I ask myself every day.
So. Oh, is it now?
It's, what do you call it? You know, it's...
You ever been stung?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
All the time?
Yeah, it sounds terrible, but you do get used to it after a while.
And
But you actually start to develop less of a reaction.
Is that right?
Which does make it, a lot more bearable.
So, you know, they say, oh, don't be afraid of bees and don't start swatting them when they come around you. Is that true?
Yeah, that's a big one. You want to just stay calm when you're working with the bees and they'll work, you know, they'll be calm with you.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of reflect your... whatever attitude you bring to them. You know, if you come in there like a bear, they're going to treat you like a bear. So
okay.
You try to be respectful and they'll, you know, respect you back.
So, Johnny, assuming that we know very little about beekeeping, how would you describe what you do?
So, yeah, pretty much the bulk of the work is done in the summertime. And, it's mostly going through the hives. You're just checking to make sure the queen bees are laying properly in each hive. And it's pretty much just maintaining the bees, giving them space to do their work. And then at the end of the year, if you do a good job, you can pull off a little honey for yourself. And that's the root of beekeeping, in essence, is
right.
Working with the bees. And, you know, they like to call beekeepers, but at the end of the day, you're more of a hive keeper. You're just their janitor, and you're making sure everything's clean and good for them, and they do all the work themselves.
How many hives do you have?
So we currently run about 150 hives.
Oh, that's a lot. So, in different areas, different fields areas?
Yeah, typically we like to keep, it's called a bee yard, so it's just like a yard full of beehives.
Uh-huh.
And in each bee yard, we usually like to keep anywhere from 20 to 30 hives. And
so,
it's just because you don't want to take all the honey from the area.
Uh-huh.
And, eventually your honey plateaus. So there's only so many flowers. So if you put all your bees in one spot,
now there's,
you want to get competitive.
Is there one queen for each hive, or how does it work?
Yeah, there's one queen bee per hive. Most of the bees inside the hive are worker bees. So that's all her daughters. And then about to the most would probably be about 10% of the hive, I'd say, on that's the high side of things, is drones, which are solely for mating with other queens, virgin queens.
Okay, and is the queen bigger? Is that how you identify her?
Oh, yeah. They always, when I first started beekeeping, the big thing they always tell us is there's only one of her in the hive, and, you can tell her real easy. She's twice the size of the other bees, and you'll see a little entourage of nurse bees and attendees kind of cleaning her up and taking care of her as she goes through the hive doing her work.
It sounds like there's a lot to learn about beekeeping. Did you have to take any special courses or anything before you decided to do this?
Yeah, so if people are considering getting into beekeeping, that's something we really push hard on. And it's when I first started years ago, I took a course at a university in British Columbia, but you can, there's plenty of courses offered. Your local beekeeping association, so Lanark, that's the Lanark County Beekeepers Association, has plenty of resources if you attend a meeting. And you can hook up with a mentor or, you know, experienced beekeepers to bounce questions off, and you can definitely go and, take courses. And the courses, there's some online through the University of Guelph, and there's others through the Tech Transfer Program. So there's
so
resources there if you're willing to look.
lots of information then for people. So
yeah.
What kind of protective clothing do you wear?
Yeah, so it depends on the year and the comfort level. So in the summertime, I'm usually just wearing a veil and obviously using my smoker just to calm them down a bit. In the fall, they're kind of cranky because they're going into winter, so they don't really want you to be rooting through their pantry and taking their honey, so they can get pretty upset about that. So, well, so usually we'll throw on the bee suit for the fall, and then springtime, everyone's just cleaning up and peachy, so spring's usually pretty mild-mannered as well. So, but it goes by your comfort level at the end of the day. Because like I said, they'll mirror your comfort, so if the beekeeper walks in, you know, in a panic,
right,
then they're going to act in a panic too. So,
Is there quite a cost to this, Johnny?
Yes, startup costs can be, initially you're looking at probably around $500 all in just to get your bees and equipment, that being the hive and basic beekeeping gear. But there's a lot more to consider, so you're looking at how are you getting the honey out, treatments, you got to feed your bees. So it does add up. It does become quite a costly hobby, but, you know, if, once again, falling back on going to associations, most beekeeping associations have gear that you can rent. I know ours does, so, like, rent for free, you're just borrowing it essentially, so, yeah.
The importance of bees as pollinators, can you talk about that for a minute?
Yeah, they're critical. Bees, not only honeybees, but you're looking at all species of bees, so the solitary bees and bumblebees. Well, they say 1 in 3 bites, you know, bee is responsible for. And I know this year we've, across the board, beekeepers have reported heavy losses.
Why is that?
It was just, last year was a really rough year for us. We had a very fluctuating winter, and then we had an extended spring last year, which just meant more mites in the hives.
Okay.
So we had, there was a lot of stressors on the girls, and the result of that was a lot of them didn't make it. So, for instance, this year, the industry got hit pretty heavy, and you're going to see that reflected in, you know, higher food prices, for instance.
Right.
Bees are required for pollination services. So, unfortunately, people, I fear, are going to get a hard lesson this year in, you know, how important our pollinators are, because they're going to see just how much, you know, food they have the bees touch in a way. So, yeah.
It's all an important part of the food chain, right?
Exactly. They're a critical step that a lot of people overlook, but it's a step nonetheless. So.
What are some of the threats, then, that we're seeing to bees right now in this day and age?
Well, the biggest is, I'd have to say, just the changing climate that we're in.
Okay.
Winters are less and less predictable, which fluctuating temperatures, you know, that's hard for them to adjust to. And then just extended growing seasons. So we're having from... you know, our springs are starting earlier, our falls are going later, and that's having an impact, too, on the bees.
So the climate change really does affect bees as pollinators, like it's affecting a lot of other things as well.
Exactly. That's kind of the root, because as soon as you extend the growing season, you extend the mite season, as they say, and the mites, there's only so many times a year that we can treat for them.
Oh,
so it's, you know, if you extend the season that we can't treat for them, it gives them more time to just flourish. So,
oh dear.
It's a nasty recipe.
What are these mites, and what do they look like? Where do they come from?
So, yeah, it's the Varroa destructor is their name, and they're these tiny little red mites that you can see them with your eye, but they are rather small.
Uh-huh.
If a bee was the size of a human...
Yeah,
the mite would be about the size of a crab.
Okay, very small.
They're not like, you know, tiny, tiny things, but big enough. And they eat the fat bodies on the bees. So they kind of, imagine like monstrous leeches.
Oh,
and they're just,
dear.
Yeah, oh, unpleasant. But they just bleed the poor girls dry, and then come winter time,
yeah,
you know, there's no, it's like a bear going into hibernation with no fat.
Right. So they don't kill the bee outright. They just...
heavily parasitize the bee, and then eventually the colony as a whole gets infected with other diseases that typically they'd be able to fight off.
Right.
Because they're already weakened by the mites, they kind of... big nail in the coffin for them.
What are some of the other threats other than the mites that you talk about and other than weather? Are there any other threats?
Pesticides play a role. That does depend heavily on where you live. I'm usually hesitant to throw the pesticide rock only because it's an easy target to throw at. But it does depend on where you live.
Mm-hmm.
So pesticides, obviously, they play a huge role, but that's more of an issue that can be dealt with, you know, with farmers and, you know, just communication, I think, is the real answer to that threat. But those are probably the biggest threats to the industry, and it's not just here in Canada. Everyone around is kind of getting hit with it. I know in Ontario we have the Ontario Resistant Honeybee Selection Program, so ORBS for short, and that's working to breed a more resistant bee.
Okay.
So it's just a stronger Ontario bee, so to speak.
And you're breeding queen bees there, aren't you?
That's correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we've recently gotten involved with the program. We finally got off our butts and decided to put the work in. And it's a hard program to join, but just in the sense that there's a lot of work to it and a lot of diligence for your breeding program. But once you get that breeding program going, it's hopefully it helps the bees in the long run.
That's incredible. And then what do you do with all the? This is a commercial bee breeder program that you have going. So then what happens? Do you sell them to other beekeepers or what?
Exactly, yeah. So
okay.
We sell them, yeah. It's kind of, we're a piece in the puzzle, so we sell it off to other beekeepers who, you know, a hobbyist beekeeper who has, you know, one or two hives.
Right.
They need a queen. We can sell them a queen, and it has those good genetics. So you're kind of starting to slowly, saturate the bee population with healthy, like these strong, resistant honeybees.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's kind of the goal. That's the goal. So, you know, it takes a long time to get to that point, but you know, we're all working hard to try and get there. So.
Are there a lot of beekeepers in Lanark County?
Yeah, our association has roughly 300 beekeepers.
Really?
But that's the beekeepers that are members of our association. Obviously, there's other beekeepers who are not.
Right.
So there's quite it's becoming quite a popular thing in the county, and you know, we're blessed with some really good honey flows, which is really nice. We get a lot of basswood honey out where we are, and we have a lot of pasture we find in the county. So pasture is good for the bees. It's not one cash crop. It's, you know, a whole bunch of wildflowers growing everywhere. So
now,
we are very fortunate.
Yes, it sounds like it. I'm just thinking of the different tastes of honey. Does that depend? Does the taste depend on the type of flower that the bee goes to then?
Yep, it sure does. The color and taste is all dependent on the variety of flower. For instance, just on the topic of basswood, it's more of a lighter honey with almost like a minty aftertaste to it.
Okay.
It's been described. So it goes from light honey to like almost black buckwheat honey. And the buckwheat honey has a very acquired taste to it.
And, of course, clover honey is always very popular, too, isn't it?
Oh, that, yeah, that's one of the most popular. It's the white bread of honey. But
yeah, right.
but it is good. It's I gotta say, it's, you know, not to sound like, oh, vanilla is my favorite ice cream flavor, but clover is one of my favorites. So.
Now, honey is medicinal too, isn't it? And we talk about raw honey as opposed to pasteurized honey, and that raw honey is supposed to be better for you as a medicinal thing if you have a cold or something.
Exactly.
What do you think of that? Is that true?
Yeah. And people can call it raw honey, unpasteurized honey. It kind of all falls under the same heading. But yeah, it's when you heat honey, you're breaking down a lot of the good amino acids in it and a lot of the nutrients in it. So of course, the unpasteurized honey is always going to hold more of the nutritional value.
I see. Okay.
And it's going to hold a lot more of its taste. So.
Are there a lot of different kinds of bees in the world?
Oh, there's, I think, I'm just shooting, but I'm pretty sure there's about 19,000.
Oh, my heavens.
Different types of, and that's like everything from, and this is North America, everything from solitary bees to, you know, obviously honeybees are the cow of the bee world, so to speak, in North America. It's more of a livestock, not really a native bee, but
I see. So the honeybees are like a livestock. It's something that people keep. The honeybees only.
Exactly. Yeah.
They're not wild
bees.
Exactly.
Honeybees were brought over from Europe.
Okay.
So it's they've naturalized into our environment, but they are
an import sort of thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, and so then there's wild bees as well. Lots of different varieties of wild bees that are just
exactly.
out there, and nobody's looking after them.
No, exactly. Yeah. No. And that's just it. It's,
yeah.
Yeah. There's leafcutter bees, mason bees, minor bees, carpenter bees. You could go on forever.
Right. I got a question for you. Do bees see the color of flowers, or do they smell the nectar, or what is it that attracts them to flowers?
A bit of both. They do see. They do see color.
They do.
They see on a different spectrum than we do. So flowers actually will look different. They see in ultra violet, as opposed to we're more on the red spectrum. So,
okay.
So they're seeing, for instance, there's tons of pictures out online of they'll take pictures of like a daisy, for instance, and instead of being a white flower. You can see the lines almost like directing the bees to the center of the flower.
Oh, is that right?
It is pretty neat. And so a bunch of flowers are run. So they see a whole different spectrum than we do. So they don't see red.
They don't.
They're blind to red.
So what color would they be attracted to mostly in a flower?
Blues. That's going to be one of their big ones that they really like.
Oh.
But they'll go after yellows. And at the end of the day, they're going to... The rule of thumb is the smaller, you don't want a flower that has many blooms, more of like a clover, the single clover plant has one clover flower.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the more highly productive flowers. So, yeah.
So how do we protect them? What can we do?
Well, planting bee-friendly flowers is a simple trick, and that helps... That helps everyone's bees. That'll help the solitary bees as well as the honeybees.
Can you give us some examples of those?
Sure. You got milkweed, poppies, lavender. Lavender's a huge... That one's a pretty easy one just because it's a more hardy plant to knock down. Echinacea, sedums, for the fall.
Right.
Hollyhocks. They're crazy about those, though. Any garden flowers, but you want to pick something that's resistant to droughts, just to make your life easy. Nothing's worse than trying to help the bees, and the plants just don't want to grow. So, but simple plants like that, clover, they love clover. So, yeah, and just, you know, the old adage of holding up to mow your lawn, you know, let the first little dandelions go and then give the lawn a cut. Just to try and give them a head start.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I won't have you repeat that list of flowers. I think if we just get a variety of nice wildflowers, get the seeds and scatter them around, is that good enough?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. Those will, you know, that's enough to, you know, if you pick a little spot in your garden and let it go, you know, wild, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
It's that's a sufficient way of, you know.
Did you mention sunflowers? What are they like for bees?
Sunflowers?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, they like them. It's a good fall flower for them.
Yeah. Okay.
Get them going for the fall. So that's always fun. We always throw a whole bunch of sunflowers just know, it's always good to, because the sunflower isn't just one flower, it's many flowers. Each seed is a flower inside the head, so it's a good source for them.
So how often do you gather the honey then?
Yeah, so it does depend on the season. We try to gather probably three times through the summer just so you can get those varieties. Because if you just kind of gather it all at once, everything's mixed together.
So you say three times during the summer, so you don't go out every week or every day or every month, or what do you do?
So I'm going out at least once a week just to check on my bees.
Okay.
And then once enough of the boxes are full of honey, we'll take the boxes off and then we'll bring them in. We call them honey supers. So we'll take the honey supers inside, extract them, and bring them back out for the bees to refill with honey, and so repeats the process.
And that would be a process in itself, right?
Yeah,
just the extracting.
Boxes.
I mean,
the boxes themselves can weigh up to 75 pounds, and you know, it becomes work real fast.
So when you take the honey out, you extract the honey.
Yep.
Do you put something back in its place?
In the honey split, or
well, for the bees to eat all winter, like, how does that work?
We try not to, towards the fall, probably the latest we'll pull honey off of is the end of August, and then from September, any honey they gather from goldenrod, asters, all those fall blooms, we let them keep that, and on top of that we supplement feed with sugar syrup as well. So
okay.
Each hive in our operation we feed 5 gallons of feed to. So, yeah, and then that kind of gives them enough weight, gives them enough honey packed away to get them through the winter, and then come spring, so starts the process again.
Sounds good. Lots of work as well. So if someone wants to start up a beekeeping business, or just as a hobby even, or to learn more about beekeeping, where do you suggest they go for that?
So the most important thing we think, I'd suggest anyway, is going to a going to your local beekeeping association.
Okay.
Because you're going to typically the associations meet 4 times a year.
Mm-hmm.
I know in our area we meet 4 times a year, and we have a bee day in August where it's all the associations in the area get together and talk bees in someone's bee yard.
Okay.
And that's the best way, because you're going to meet, you know, commercial beekeepers in your area, hobbyist beekeepers, people who are just starting, and people who have been at it for, you know, years. So.
And they'll meet you there as well.
Exactly. And, you know, beekeepers, we tend to like to stay in our hives, but, you know, we will answer questions, and we do like to talk, so it's good for everybody, really.
That's great. So for people to head to or to visit Lanark County Beekeepers Association, and they'll find all the information there that they need, right?
Correct. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Great. Johnny, I want to thank you very much for this. It's been very interesting. And good luck with your honey production there this year.
Awesome. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. Anytime to talk about bees.
Very interesting discussion. Thank you so much, Johnny. Take care.
All right, you too.
Bye-bye now. My guest, Johnny DeMatos, is a local beekeeper and commercial breeder of queen bees at Matos Apiary. I'm Linda Dow. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend.